Unfiltered opinions.
Sometimes you have ideas and you're not quite sure why.
You secure the bag.
Sometimes you meet people and realize there's probably a reason why you stayed in touch.
Just listen.
Sometimes all the pieces just come together by themselves.
Woo! I'm Jimmy Moyaha.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Good morning. Welcome to another episode of Insider Exchange. Thanks for tuning in, folks. This week, you might see things looking a little bit different in studio. And that is because Cy is out with the man flu. So I've had to call in some serious reinforcements, in particular reinforcements that wouldn't be affected by the man flu. So co-hosting me for this week's episode is going to be a good friend of ours, Mushima Gama. She joins us in studio. But alongside that, for our Market Matters, as you can see, Market Matters is sponsored by Trive for this week. We thank them for continuing to help us do the work that we do and for sending Sean Dendera to keep joining us in studio for all the madness. Sean, thanks again, as always. He never looks happy to be here, but we love having him here. We're going
to
be taking a look at a couple of things. We're going to be looking at gold. We're going to be looking at the Trump sanctions. We're going to be looking at opportunities in terms of what news might be coming out, what stocks might be interesting to look at, and everything else in between. I think before we kick off, I found it very interesting that the Trump wars, Trump is having a war with everybody, right? But the Trump-Canada war took a very interesting twist this past week, or the US-Canada war took an interesting twist this past couple of weeks or so. Actually, the last weekend and now into last week, with Kendrick winning the 5 Grammys and then going on to perform at the halftime concert. That was clearly the best evidence of USA versus Canada I've seen in the longest time.
I think it's the only credible one.
That's it, because everything else, tariffs and everything, not interesting, but not like us.
Exactly. Drake versus Kendrick. Fair enough.
Yeah, that was an interesting development. I mean, especially coming off of, again, the Grammys, going into Super Bowl being such a big event, right? And it's Americans think it's the biggest thing that happens.
Yeah.
And you look at the numbers and you're like, it's not that big in the outside world. But okay, we'll let them
like
have
FIFA
that.
World Cup, right?
It's not, right? We'll let them have that either way. The halftime performance taking everybody by surprise, and Kendrick clearly getting out of a lawsuit with some technicalities there as well. That seems to be the flavor of the month, right? That's just like...
Look, we need some reprieve. We really do. The information, we just need something.
We need a break from Trump.
We need a break.
Which we're not getting, eh, Sean?
I don't think we're going to get that for the next 4 years. It's going to be Trump every week.
It's
really
easy to it now.
I mean, one of our colleagues mentioned we shouldn't be speaking about Trump the whole time. But what else is there to speak about? Trump.
Sanctions on South Africa because of the land. I saw the Rand reacting to that. And the Rand strengthening was a clear sign that the markets think he's crazy. Because the Rand, for all it's worth, is a very politically driven currency, policies and all. And for once, you're looking at it and it's not the policies of South Africa that are working against us. At this point, it's South Africa's calm and Donald Trump's erratic behavior.
True. Quick question, right? Okay, the Rand is strengthening, but do you think from a political landscape that the powers that be are responding accordingly, and that's why, you know, the Rand is still a bit steady? Because we haven't panicked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've gone out and tried to explain, guys, it's actually not expropriation without compensation.
Mm.
I mean, I was speaking to someone over this weekend and he was saying that if we look at the act, which I have not read, so I cannot confirm this information.
Yeah.
But you're saying that first tier is that we're looking at land that's unoccupied, unused.
Mm.
So we're not going to now go and say, Mushima, we're taking your land. Jimmy, we're taking your land. Whomever, and so on and so forth, right? So I think that from a South Africa perspective and for preservation of our economy and the beloved Rand, is we just need to find a way to not be, as Cyril said, bullied, and explain our stance and stick to the stance, whether we believe it's right or wrong. Let's protect our sovereignty as a country.
Well, I will come back to that question. I want Mushima to answer it first because she believes that she doesn't want to live on Earth anymore. So,
fair enough.
That was private.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I don't really think it's the land issue. Mostly, I think it's just a cover up. It's more of the Israel thing that is now causing him, that's making him, that's, you know, making that gout inflamed. But it's, and if we stick to our guns in terms of the humanitarian part of things as to why we did it, then it's about time that we get all this aid cut off, guys. Because that's how we are just holding, we just put in that chokehold. And I mean, not knowingly to Trump, he's literally, you're going to start causing a decline in the dollar with what he's doing, because a lot of people are pulling out because it's now Trump and Elon. It's not just Trump, right?
Exactly.
And now Elon is part, I mean, have you read, one of his biggest investors are starting to pull out of Tesla's, their shares, they an asset management in Europe. I think it's about $230 million or even more that are pulling out. It's just, it's, they're causing trouble, which I think is kind of necessary to change the status quo that we've been under, particularly in Africa.
Exactly. No, we were having this chat. I remember having this chat with Sai last week as well, after we finished our episode, to say that Donald Trump could quite possibly be the catalyst that causes the decline of the dollar that he's trying to prevent. Yes. You know what I mean? But, and that's because of the radical behavior and what we're seeing in the markets. On the other side of it, on the land issue and whatever, what's happening in South Africa, the political maturity, aside from the debates that are happening on X and all these other platforms, whether it's right or wrong, that's different conversations for another time, 100%. Right? What you mentioned, Sean, quite importantly, around what's actually happening and how the responses are being perceived in the market is kind of what's been driving, again, things like the dollar, things like the rand against the dollar, but also when you just look at where risk is. We're going to look at gold in a second. And for the first time, everybody's like, yeah, we're going to stay away from that corner of the world.
Exactly. Yes.
Because you actually don't know what's going to happen, right?
It's so erratic. Like, it's so erratic. Exactly. Now it's the war with the straws. Like, what
down with paper straws. We're bringing back plastic. Those are not my words. Those are the words of the 47th president of the United States. Please do not quote me. Thank you. Yes, the straws are another thing
what's
that people are fighting
today?
About.
Like, we don't know.
Every
there was a
day.
Point I wanted to jump on which you mentioned, right? And we mentioned this last week as well about the funding, right? Like last week, I mean, we say that maybe it is a good thing, right? Because it allows us to recreate ourselves, right? Reevaluate, see how we can become more self-sustainable.
Who are we without the man? Find out who we really are.
Exactly. So there is positives and negatives. Obviously, there are people that depend on the aid and the money that was coming in. But long-term wise, we got minerals, a strong financial sector. We just need to find a way to consolidate and ensure that the country actually grows in the right direction. And then we technically do not need aid if we get GDP
also,
to the right point.
Also, the aid has been cut over the years. It's not the first time they've been cutting it. So we've been knowing that they're going to cut aid.
Exactly.
It's about time we change.
I listened to the State of the Nation address last week, Thursday, and I found one or two of the points quite interesting. One of them was that around the aid that South Africa gets from the US for things like HIV and TB treatments and all of that, Cyril mentioned that President Ramaphosa, mentioned can't call Malume Cupcake just by his first name like we know him like that. We don't know him like that. I apologize. The president mentioned that I think only 17% of that funding still comes from the US. In other words, South Africa has been able to make up the other 80%. Yes. So we're not necessarily going to suddenly stop these programs because we don't have that funding. And he mentioned very clearly that it's about just finding that balance and catering for the amount that's no longer coming through. To that point, there's already rumblings that China's happy to give us money for that.
Exactly.
But they're obviously happy to back a lot of BRICS countries. And that's the BRICS. That's the other thing, right? Just the BRICS conversation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's another thing that we should be. It's just Trump always feels like he's won with the whole Canada thing with the tariffs. The agreement they made was something that was already agreed on. So they're just putting, you know, and he's like, okay, I won this one. Okay, cool. And now it's the sanctions South Africa, but they've already been. So, okay, I won this one. You know, like.
Your Canada thing just reminded me of something very interesting. Trump came out and said, we're undoing the worst policies or the worst trade deals or whatever that were put in place for Canada, right?
They're still in place.
Who put in place those deals? It was Trump in 2018. Trump is undoing Trump. That's exactly what happened here, right? So in 2018, he signed this deal and said, this is the best trade deal in the history of forever. Now he's come out and said, this is the worst trade deal. We can't have this. We don't know who put this in place. We're undoing it immediately. And suddenly he's the hero. How are you the villain and the hero in your own story?
It's an interesting way.
It's a very interesting story, eh?
But
this comes to the point of, and I'm glad you've got the chart up around the gold side of it, is the markets are like, we're just staying away. We just don't, we don't want any of this. We don't know where it's going to go. We don't know what's going to happen next. We just know.
Which is why gold then becomes the
safe haven.
Tell us. What are we looking at?
So what I've done literally is just show you, I've kind of looked at this gold chart a few times, and it's just the result of it was a bit scary because I thought, in what way could gold go there? But what you do in technical analysis, obviously look at what happens past in order to see what's going to happen in the future. So I'm just there. I'm going to flip on from the old chart to the new chart so you could just see how this is probably going to pan out. So I've got the chart here to the most extended I would, which in a trading view, it gives me about 2002. But we'll look at it from 2006 up to where it really spiked up to about...
So around 2011, 2012-ish or so, okay, just so before that.
Just note that that is a six-year period.
Okay.
Now, I've kind of added the Dow theory so that you can conceptualize everything in terms of how the trends go. So the Dow theory states that every time a trend, there's optimism in the market, the trend becomes steeper. But the trend then becomes steeper when a particular trend line is breached. So in this case, in time, this key trend line from this first phase, and it's in three phases. So when it breaches the first phase, it becomes steeper. When it breaches the trend line of the second phase, third phase becomes steeper. But the third phase is just like candles going up. Mm. Scariest, and scariest in the sense that you don't know when it's going to pull back, but the returns from that are juicy, you know? So this is a six-year period. This was a point in time. I think all of this post was post the Great Recession, and then it became the sovereign debt in Europe that then caused that demand. And then this was that third spike thing. That third spike is usually the shortest, the juiciest, but you need to be in the second phase already.
Mm.
And then from there onwards, it then plateaus. So how you would then have calculated where it's going to go, it's always the width of the trend, of the channel.
Mm.
So the channel there said it was predicted it would go to 1,655. And the channel breakout there predicted it was going to go to 1,825, but it just went up slightly to 1,920.
Yeah, but right? You covered, in both cases, you covered the full distance, yes, if
the target,
not more.
Of, yes. And then from that time, when that is complete, then the third phase is usually the one that triggers a potential downside.
Okay.
And when the third phase is done, it goes to the second phase. When that is breached, then it's just downside from there onwards.
Okay.
This is a six-year pullback. And this is pretty much the time when there was a quantitative easing in the US. The dollar became more attractive. That caused the gold to pull back. Now, this is a six-year from 2011 when it broke out 2015, right? That's roughly.
Mm.
Now, I'm going to squeeze to this part.
Well, December of 2015, so 2016 effectively.
Yeah, 2016, six years. So then this is our current place. So this little part here, this is where it broke out in 2000.
Okay, so that's what we just looked at. That was a small little piece there. Okay.
Yeah, so this part, so it broke out and then it started to do a funny plateauing here. That was really, it's just the most frustrating part when it's plateauing until it literally breaks out of its entire bear trend, which was part of the sixth year, which means then we're in, now take a look at this date. So it's 2019. What's a six-year period?
2025.
Right? So this is the first phase, which is the blue part. It breached the upper slope. It's in the second phase.
Now we're getting ready for that third phase that you say is crazy. Yeah, so I see 3,400 on a chart.
I know. When I saw this, I was like, I think it's a bit too overzealous. Maybe just mention the shorter targets.
Mm.
Now, remember when I came on the last time, we were literally about around here. And I mentioned that it might then go to 2,590. I mean, which
no,
did.
You called 2,610 and it hit exactly
yes,
that.
Yes, it went around there, but that was the target for this.
Yeah.
Now, it broke out of a little flag thing, I mean, rather a triangle thing that Jen says it's likely to go up to 2,990. Also heading to this slope here. RSI overbought means we should anticipate a bit of a pullback. Thank goodness, because some of us would like to get in. Right?
100%.
Yeah, would like 100%. To get in. So if it does pull back, I think the most it could fall back is 2,790. But it would still be within this channel.
So 2,800 or so odd.
So once it holds above there, now it has to hold above there in order for this to continue with its upside. Mm. trick is, if it doesn't and it breaches this upper slope, remember, when the upper slope is breached, the trend goes, and the third slope is quite steep.
It could just start off.
So it could start off that trend to about the target of this, of the width of this channel upwards is 3,245. Now, if it does the 15% like it did previously, that means it could go to 3,440. And from there onwards, I think that's the time where we could then see that plateau, the part where we can see the six-year.
Do you think that six-year plateau would now be affected by the fact that of that 6 years that will now start, most of that will be under a Trump presidency? Do you think that might have, for the first time in history, potentially have a different outcome on the gold price?
Outcome. Because at this point, I mean, this what I'm showing you is pretty much the utopia we can with gold until it gets to 3,440 in this geopolitical dystopia we're in. And because gold then becomes a safe haven, and with all of this uncertainty with Trump, this is literally going to potentially start that third phase. And the third phase in the previous one was about a month old. Third phases could be less than 6 months. But I figure towards the end of the year, we're probably going to start seeing some plateauing once it has at most hit 3,440.
Ooh. I have a question, just I guess for the viewers. So this whole time, while we're going into these phases, right?
Yeah.
What do we... It's a bit of spin in the works, and we're not going to hold you to it. What do you think is happening to the dollar or the dollar index?
Because there's an inverse effect. Obviously, the dollar would then be... The dollar is already starting with... There's an inverse, so it's pulling back whilst this is going up. There are cases where there is... It's now... Remember, you have to buy the dollar in order to get gold.
Precisely.
Yeah, the gold is priced in dollars.
So if you're getting more dollars in order to get the gold, that's obviously going to push, you know, that's demand for gold. So then there is a time when there's a decorrelation because of this uncertainty that's causing that. But then once it's reached a particular point in time and the dollar and gold, when it gets to the third phase, this is just based on technical analysis and the psyche of people, that when it is in that, then you're right, there is that inverse effect where gold is going to pull back and dollar is going to go up. But it's going to be a gradual... At some point, the dollar has to pull back from the levels that it's in.
Okay.
Right? But I think the correlation, there is a sense where there is a decorrelation. It's not always the same, but there is a decorrelation at some point. And I think this is when the fundamentals then come into play, where we will see that decline in gold of some sort.
Cool, because I'm a fundamentals guy, so hence I was asking the question.
No, it's definitely going to be an interesting time. I'm looking at a gold chart now. Current price just under $2,900 an ounce. We are obviously
very close,
very optimistic around where we could be going. But folks, you know the disclaimers. This is Moshima's analysis.
Yes.
Do your own. Do not come back and say you got financial advice from her. This is what she said. This is what happened. Do your own analysis. We happen to have a favorable opinion of her analysis, but that's from a different biased point of view. The disclaimer tells you we do not give financial advice. This is not financial advice. Sorry, Moshima, you were saying?
I was just saying that in the aspect where it doesn't breach the upper slope, then there'll just be a gradual move within the channel. But that upper slope is what will cause a breach from there. Is what will cause that speedy or that celerity towards that quite quickly.
But also looking at that channel, if we say just tick along up through that channel all the way up to 3.2 even, right? Uh-huh. And let's say we're still in the channel at 3.2. Mm-hmm. Surely that then says to me that when we break out of that channel, we're going to smash beyond 3.5. That just means it's going to be even more exponential at that point.
Yeah, it's a possibility. Because, the last from 2020... From 2005 to 2011, it went up about 400 and something percent. We're only in currently from the second phase in the prior chart was about a 30% move. We're just under 30% now with the current move that we're in. And then there's additional 15 that we can anticipate, but that's if it breaches upper slope. If not, then it means it increases that, you know, that range band upward slope. So that's just the part we have to considerably look at is if it breaches that upper slope, or else it will just zigzag or oscillate between these two slopes.
Folks, that's why Simon said last week that the only thing he's looking at the moment is gold. We're going to leave the conversation on that note for the live stream. We're going to dive into a couple of things in our deep dive and our investor insights. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for jumping on to TikTok. A big shout out while I am looking at our TikTokers. We finally did. I mean, it took us forever. It felt like forever. It wasn't really forever, but it felt like a really long time. But we finally hit 20,000 followers on TikTok. Shout out to our TikTok community. You guys have been absolutely amazing. What we've absolutely loved is just the engagement and the feedback that you guys have given us, particularly on some of the conversations. I mean, the school conversation was one of them. Recently, the contactless payments conversation. You guys are absolutely on fire in the comments. Don't stop. Share your unfiltered opinions. Give us all of that, because that's how we build the community. That's how we grow together. That's how we understand things better. So yes, huge shout out to our TikTokers and our TikTok community. We're going to continue to see if we can get bigger and better from here on out. As I said, this is Market Matters for this week. We're going to move on to our deep dive. We're going to move on to our investor insights. And as you know, those segments will be out later in the week. Welcome to our deep dive. We're diving into the property space. We're diving into the stockfell space. We're diving into just making investments more fashionable, property investments in particular. If you're just joining the show and you're wondering what's happening in studio, go back and check out our Market Matters. There's a big explainer as to what happened to Sai this week, why he's missing, and why Moshima is sitting here doing the show with me. Moshima, thanks again for willing to just dive off the deep end. The property conversation is a conversation you and I have been having, and just I think there's so many different angles to it, right? There's so many different perspectives around how do I do it? How do I get into the property space? How do I do it if I can't afford it? All of those sorts of things. And you were just telling me you waited 8 years to now make the move that you're making from a property perspective.
Yeah, because it's, look, it was especially, okay, I love Cape Town. And it was especially based on having to buy property in an area that I love. Mm-hmm. I'm a Joburger. Quite happy with Joburg. But I did see that there was a decline in Joburg, and there was, you know, it's always cyclical, and I wanted to be somewhere that I also would love to go to without having to pay rent in Cape Town, because the rent then becomes quite ridiculous at the price that, you know, it's currently going. And it was following through the trends of actually the parts of Cape Town that were semi-dilapidated and that they've got, I hate the word gentrification, but it is kind of like in that sense, cleaning up, maybe let's just put it that way. And because of that, the property price has become a bit lower. With that in the future, then it becomes an appreciation, because then when it looks cleaner, then people want to live in there. So that has been my 8 year, you know, trying to, it wasn't just looking at one particular area. It's just finding an area where I knew that, okay, at this point, the trajectory is quite up with appreciation in prices.
It's quite interesting, because the Cape Town conversation has been a very hot topic, with everybody saying Cape Town is unaffordable and those sorts of things. And you think about just property in general, and you think about, obviously, interestingly, it lines up with the other land conversations that are taking place. But I think about a company like McDonald's, where their business model fundamentally is securing good property sites, not necessarily how many McDonald's stores they can put up, but it's about is the site convenient for us from a property perspective? And they buy out their property pieces. I don't know if they still do that, but last I checked, they bought out the land upon which the McDonald's would sit on, and you could have the lease to the McDonald's, and you could sell that lease to someone else, whatever. But McDonald's as a business then fundamentally is a property business.
That's an exceptional business concept. I mean, just think about the McDonald's that are around here in Joburg. They're very much in prime spots. I didn't really think. Oh, so
the freestanding ones. Obviously, the ones in the malls are a bit different to navigate. But you think about all the freestanding ones and look at where they're located. It's a property play more than it is a convenience play.
It makes such
and in the long
sense.
Term, what does that do for a market? When you think about, you look at the Cape Town example. I mean, you say you've lived in Cape Town before. When do you remember Cape Town looking a certain way, or prices being at a certain point versus where they are now?
So I'm not necessarily have lived there, but prior, apparently, Sea Point and Green Point were a bit of a slump. And I mean, if you look at it now, those property prices have gone from slump prices to, it's crazy. If you want to live in Cape Town, unless you've got the balance sheet for areas in that part, then it's easy for you. But you need to, when you look at the properties, kind of move outside of town, slightly outside of town. But if you move completely outside of town, you'll get more reasonable. But the economies of scale in terms of your traveling to town, and I mean, unless you're a digital nomad of some sort, but that that was the point of my thinking as well. At that point, is thinking, okay, if Greenpoint and Seapoint were able to change as much as they have, then there is a saturation in town that's going to disseminate to the closer parts. And it's a natural kind of dissemination into that. I think from going from Greenpoint, that's it. That's not going to Bantry Bay. And, you know,
Bantry Bay, Camps Bay, that side of the world. Yeah, that side of the world. Yeah.
But then moving on the other end where it would then be the city, the ICC, Woodstock, Salt River, that becomes more reasonable. But the trick is trying to catch it when it's... when it's low. Similar to what we talked about with Sasol. Okay? Once it's dipped, it's a time
to get in. We'll get into Sasol. That's coming up later in the show. But on the property side of it, how do you then have it be accessible? Because property in itself, whether you're a first-time buyer, whether you're a repeat buyer, is not a cheap exercise, right? There's so much that goes into purchasing a property, finding the right property, all of those sorts of things. And if someone's looking at it from kind of an investor standpoint, I've often had conversations to say, this thing can be done if we do it together. Because the moment you start thinking about, and I've written a piece about this, I wrote a piece about Stockfels at some point last year, I think, that was published. It's up on one of the blogs that I write as well.
But take a look, yeah.
Yeah, Stockfels being one of the most powerful tools that exists in the black economy and in the South African economy, just that concept of being able to pull resources together and then go out and do something.
And the funny thing is, it's doable when you're doing it as a group, right? But as you individually, it's a bit difficult for you to save yourself as a Stockfel. So the Stockfel puts those rules that give you that mandatory thing that you have to pay in, which is an excellent part of now when you, instead of moving it, because it previously it's for groceries, you know, to help you with certain things. And when it was your month, you were either going to extend your house or, you know, now it is now putting it into a particular fund, let's just say a property fund, where we all could share the costs of
what's coming up.
So at a beautiful destination that you know that you all like, let's just Richards Bay or just Cape Town, anywhere in Mpumalanga, then you pool into that together and you can all share it. So there is that part of an investment. And obviously, if you all decide to sell, then it is it's an appreciation of that and you've enjoyed the benefits of living there. There is that part of having to buy physical property or also just buying the shares itself.
No, but I think for a lot of people, it's the shares are one thing, right? So you can have a share portfolio, but there's something that comes from the utility of actually owning the property. So let's say a bunch of friends, and I want to get into that as to whether or not it's better to be investing with friends or investing with family and the debates that come from there. But the utility that says if Jimmy and Moshima go and buy out a two-bedroom apartment in Cape Town and we have that property, it means that we now have a place we can use. If I fly to Cape Town for holiday, if I fly to Cape Town for business meetings, there's a place I can now use. I don't have to rent out accommodation, right?
Exactly.
So I don't get that kind of utility from investing in a growth point that might own property at the V&A waterfront. It's all nice and well to have the share appreciation. But I think with property, the different element is that there is utility. I can make use of it. I don't have to sit there and watch its value appreciate while I don't get to enjoy it.
Correct, which I think is probably more valuable at this case, specifically for in a destination like Cape Town. I think it's something I would totally get into if it was a pool of you and I or three of us, and we just have that share because the capital to put in is reduced.
Mm.
It's not the amount. And unless you're looking to move in permanently, then that's a different story. But it is also, it's the utility as well as getting the benefit from the appreciation in the price and just knowing, look, the growth rate of property in Cape Town is high. So I think it is we're moving towards that.
Mm.
And Stockfels are actually starting to move towards that, which for me is quite thrilling because then one can create their own portfolio. And on the topic about friends and...
That's the thing, because now we look at the downsides, right? So do I do it with friends or do I do it with complete strangers? And you mentioned something about when we need to exit, right? So if now there's 10 of us in a property and only one person wants to exit while the other want to hold on, do we now go and find a replacement investor or do we now take up that person's share amongst the 9 of us? Because now those are the considerations that come alive when you now have other partners that are invested with you.
I would personally think, for the semantic, it's probably best with people you don't know.
Okay, why?
Because then the human emotion, and don't get me wrong, there's something I am willing to do. That's something I've been calling my friends, saying, let's just pull in. You know, this whole thing of having to get land and then you all build each other's, you know, pull in that. That's something I dream of. But these are very close friends. But even with friends, you know what, Jimmy? In fact, you just have to get the legal processes right. That there should not be no emotions involved in that. If anyone crosses the line or if anyone wants to do that, there is repercussions, or you will then, it's just getting the legals.
Just be on the same page kind of thing.
Yeah, just be on the same page. And no one would be like, oh, boyfriends. You're like, the paper, you know.
Protect everybody. I suppose look at the paperwork as, we're not doing this because we don't trust anybody. We're doing it because we just want to cover everybody.
You have to have the paperwork.
Yes, yes.
Because the emotions can run dry. Families have ended because of these things, or friendships. You know what I'm saying?
But it's true.
It's the paperwork being done, but we all get to enjoy a piece of land and still be able to profit from it when it's time to exit.
One of the comments that I saw on X, I think it was late last year, was something about, it's not the bond, it's not the property, it's the cost of the rates, the taxes, the maintenance, the upkeep and all of that. And I suppose if it's a group effort, then you don't feel it as much, right? Then you say, okay, no, my contribution towards this is 200-300 rand, but 300 rand from 10 different people is 3,000 rand, and that whole property is then maintained, I suppose.
It's like a timeshare, right?
It is, right? Yeah. It's a timeshare, but without the... I think the timeshare concept was good at some point in life, right? I think about it back when it was around in my parents' and my grandparents' era. But the challenge with the timeshare thing was I couldn't use the property when I wanted to use the property.
Yes,
so now if we build our own rules, and now the community in the Stokvel says... Oh, are you there this weekend? No, we'll take it this other weekend. No, we'll rent it out this other weekend.
And besides, it's a smaller collective than the timeshare. Mm. The timeshare was a bigger, you know, it was a scheme with all. But this is, you just, I mean, what WhatsApp group, you kind of chat, listen, guys, I'm in, is anyone in there at that time? I think it is the most conducive. It's something that we, I think a lot of us are going to start getting into in terms of not owning the property, because owning the property on your own and you're not there for the entire year, it's just a cost that is...
That's something else, hey?
Because you need the uptake. Someone needs to be there to be flushing. Just something to...
What about the element of the property manager? Because now you've got guys that have the properties. I might have 2, 3, 4, 5 properties. I hire a property manager. I pay them a fixed amount and they're responsible for managing those properties.
It makes the deal sweeter.
Do you then do that even as a collective and say, hey guys, we have day jobs.
Run it like a business, yes.
Run it like a business. Okay, there we go. Run your property investment like a business. Okay.
And if it happens to be empty, let's say we all agree that, okay, right, December time, no one seems to be wanting to go to that part. Because you can Airbnb it or something, that is additional income. But the income gets into a pool of some sort.
Or you put the income back into the property. So we say we're not going to generate any income from this. If we rent it out for X amount, all of that money goes into refurbishing it because you still get the benefit of that refurbishment.
And it reduces your property.
That's it. So you have Smeg appliances in your fancy property, in your holiday home kind of thing.
You know what I'm saying? And it's just the legalities of, and the emotion that's put into it. But the rest of it just sounds like a very credible
business. It sounds like a dream, right? But and I think about it from a dream perspective and I'm like, but then... If this is something that works out like that, why have we not done it at scale? And obviously challenges like not having the disposable income to invest into it and that sort of thing, those things come up as legitimate challenges as to what prevents us from going down this road. But I suppose another part of it is the fighting that happens and the lack of trust or the breach or you broke this, you must replace this, or the normal things that come with being human. And that's probably what we get around in the contracts, as you said. The legal side of it is what governs how we then
also
navigate
how the banks are actually offering the bond itself. So I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah, if you're saying, oh, no, I need a, you know,
that's another thing.
Mill and I just need a million, they'd be like, where are you getting the rest? And I mean, more conducive to that since it becomes a topic, but it is either you're putting in hard cash or you're getting the loan, but you'd have to explain it to a bank that I'm part of this.
So you're saying a hindrance to this is the financial system that we have. And as you say that, I agree with you 100% because I think about the times I've gone to a bank to have this conversation. And the conversation is, are you applying in your individual capacity? Are you applying in a joint capacity with some partner or with a family member or whatever it is? And then they assess all of everybody's kind of individual profiles and combine them and all of that sort of stuff. And I know with a Stokvel, it's operated differently. And I know there's guys that have property stock files. I must just remember who they are, and we'll have them potentially come onto the show, I suppose, to talk about this. But for our community, for the audience out there, for those that are watching and tuning in, I definitely want to get your experiences around the property space, right? Some of the questions you've had, some of the experiences you've had, some of the challenges you've faced. I mean, we've outlined some of them in this conversation, but that's definitely not the full exhaustive list of challenges that people go through. And I think the financial one is probably going to be such a massive headache for anyone thinking about this. But please share your experiences with us. Give us your comments. Give us your feedback. We love to hear what you're experiencing, and perhaps what you're experiencing might inform what someone else goes through, and it might help them make a better decision for themselves. And we'd love to see how the conversation then unfolds from a property investment point of view. But you were saying?
So I was saying, unless, you know, another cool way of doing it possibly is if you have a trajectory of when you want to buy the property. So for the 5 years, let's just say you all decide in 5 years, you will then look for something to buy. But within that 5 years, you accumulate the capital, because once you have a bigger deposit, the bank is
makes
more,
it easier it, to
makes
finance.
It easier, but you, as a group, if we decide now, you know.
But then don't I miss out on the opportunity? So in that time, what if that property gets sold, or the property we're eyeing gets sold?
No, you don't necessarily.
So don't
look
at a specific property.
Just look at the area and research on the area.
This is what we want to achieve.
This is what we want to achieve. Okay. And by this amount. So I'm trying to get a pool of my friends to do that, but this is for land though. That will at some point try and retire on.
Okay.
But it's getting a date on when we're going to start putting in this money, so that and then also just getting your ducks in the row in terms of the legalities of that, and maybe presenting it as a corporate to a bank, unlike an individual.
No, I was thinking that. I was thinking going the extent of registering a company with the CIPC,
exactly.
Getting that company. You can also register with the South African Stokvel Association, so you're governed by a Stokvel mandate and do the whole thing the way it should be done. And then after that, everybody's kind of a beneficiary to the Stokvel. You've got the terms, you've got the legal side of it covered. I mean, speak to a lawyer, get all of that stuff
in place. I think it really is doable, and it is probably one of the best ways of personally owning property in an area that's quite expensive and has
and with multiple areas.
And,
because
yeah,
now
areas
if I've got a if I qualify, and here's perhaps this is something we could look into. If I qualify for R1 million loan, right? Why is it that I can't split that? So in America, I can put down a down payment of a certain percentage and then kind of like free roll the rest of it and all of that. In South Africa, they kind of have you take up the whole loan and then, you know?
You can put in a huge deposit though.
No, but I'm trying to think of it without the deposit perspective. So I'm looking at it to say, if Jimmy qualifies for R1 million, Moshima qualifies for R1 million, between the 2 million, instead of buying one R2 million property, why are we then not allowed to split it across 5 or 6 properties at a lower cost and diversify our own risk from that perspective?
That's if you're just buying property in order for buying property, not necessarily to utilize it.
But it's investment property, which also now attracts a different level of tax and all of those conversations.
Okay. I've got my mind racing. I'm feeling like, I'm just like, wow, this is something that we should. And I think it is gaining traction in that aspect, that people are like, we could do more with the Stokvel money than just consume other things. Let's invest in it. I've been waiting for this opportunity to be coming on board, but obviously it needs a collective to start to make it coming to fruition. And I think this topic will probably get a lot of people's minds racing.
And that's the point, right? That's why we have these conversations, is to share our experiences, to share what we know, what we don't know, to learn from each other and see if we can just improve our own financial lives and the financial lives of others. I think what we're going to do is we're going to look into the property Stokvel side of it, right? I know there are property Stokvels out there. I've spoken to some of them. I might see if we can reach out to them, get them back on the show, see how they've set up things. We might even look to see if we set up our own and see how we build that.
Exactly.
I'm just thinking about...
us?
No, but because you do the math as well, right? If we do the math on... I think they did the math. It was an unrelated example, but someone did the math on the amount of people in the country. If we all contributed R200 or something. Oh, it was the alcohol thing. Someone said that South Africans spend R7.7 billion on alcohol in the December month, and they worked it out that if 40 million people had spent R256 a month on this alcohol or whatever it is, we got to R256 a day or something like that. We got to the 7 billion. But that just gives you an idea of the power that numbers have, right? Give us your feedback around this. If we were to build a proper property stockfell, set it up, have it registered, have it governed by the Stockfells Association, have everything built in place for you such that you could deposit 500 Rand a month. That was it. Would that be something people would be keen to do? We'd love to get your thoughts on that, because if that's how we change everybody's lives and that's how we start to change our own lives, then that's it. I would, I don't know about you guys, but I for one would love to have a property in Cape Town that I could just go to, know that I can stay there without paying an exorbitant amount of money, and potentially even know that I can go there without needing a passport. Those are those Cape Town passport conversations will start up again. But yes, we're going to leave the deep dive there because we've run out of time. We'd love to get your thoughts and your feedback on those particular points that we've left out there. We're going to come back to them and we'll give you feedback on them next week. We'll give you feedback or even after that as we continue with the rest of the year. If you guys are keen on setting up a property stockfell, give us a shout, let us know. Yeah, see, we've already got our first sign up there, right? So let's see how that goes. Until next time, we'll leave the deep dive on that note. And we wrap things up with our investor insights, continuing the conversation with me as has been throughout the day. Hosting the show with me is Moshima Gama. She's standing in for Sai, who's out. We're going to be taking a look at some interesting models, not the kind that sit in a GQ magazine, but the kind that Moshima builds. And then we're going to look at our wall. We're going to update the wall, see what's happening there, and see if we are liking anything in particular. Moshima, Valentine's Day is coming up on Friday. What model are you building? Apparently, it's not to do with that. It's unrelated.
It's just
what's happening?
Give me a sign if, you know, the guys are a hard buy.
Okay.
And if they're a sell, then I know that it's not. It's not, yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, leading up to it, I just have to just kind of put in their name and see what the chart, the trend is doing for that. They pass trend into the future.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. We'll get into the model in a second. Before we get into the model, community out there, I'm going to do you guys a solid, right? And I'm going to be a good wingman. If anyone would like to take Moshima out for Valentine's Day, she may or may not be open to that. Please don't come here with offers that below, you know, the quality of the woman that sits across from us. Please bring those offers through. And maybe, just maybe, we'll get some feedback next week on how the Valentine's Day went. That's all I'm going to say on the matter. I will. We'll set up chats. We'll see what offers come through. She will decide the offers. We don't have any say in that. But don't say I didn't put you guys on, right?
I'll put the daughter in the model.
So tell me about this model you're building. What's happening?
All right. So look, I'm looking at a whole lot of stocks on it because it's I do analysis on commodities, equities, currencies, and so forth. Mm. And this is looking up at charts for all of those. So I needed something. It's sort of something that would give me signals on if sentiment is changing in any of the shares without me having to get into the chart or looking at the charts individually. So it started off as that change in sentiment. So I just built a model based on macros based on that. Tell me when there's a change in sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started getting into a rabbit hole. And I was like, so if it tells me change of sentiment, will it tell me when to actually buy?
When to act on that. Yes.
When to act. And if it is a point of acting, is it a good signal to act or is it a weak signal? So in it, you'll
strength
it will say,
of the
look,
signals
it's reached
as well. Yes,
a particular level, but it's not a strong buy or it's not a strong sell. So
have you How long have you been building this? Because this sounds like years. 6 years of work. Okay, 5 years of work.
Oh,
all right.
This is actually going to be my sixth year.
There we go. 6 years
I'm
of work.
I'm in a 6 year cycle like gold, yeah. So I'm hoping this sort of is just being for equities.
Mm.
And now I've moved into CFD trading.
You're just going into, you're just digging deeper and deeper.
That's getting into an hourly and a daily and not necessarily a monthly and a weekly. It's a lot of fun, but because I'm like writing the macros myself, you can sit there for hours trying to figure out why it's not working. But it is so thrilling once you see it all concatenating and coming together.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the model is about. So
that's
I literally,
crazy.
If you ask me something, I just pull up, I'm like, what is it saying?
Mm.
And then it will kind of give me a signal that it's time to look at a chart because there's a particular development. So if it's trading sideways, it's not worth my time.
But you're building the model on your research and your style
so
of analysis.
Element.
So
yes.
It's not saying just look at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's saying this is what I look at as Moshima.
So it's a two-part.
Right?
Uh-huh. So is the what is happening on the chart without telling me. So if there is a strong movement, there was a fake out, it would say, look, it went there, but it's a fake out.
Mm.
And then when it comes, then that is the part of telling me what the chart is doing. And then the analysis part, that's the two-part part, that will say, is it a good buy or not, mm-hmm. based on the candle performance.
The other things that you build into the model. Yes. That's quite interesting. I look forward to seeing what this thing looks like when it's... I imagine it's something that you're always going to be working on and tweaking and adjusting. And yeah. as you learn new information, learning you build new things. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is something. I mean, once it's complete, I'll share it with you.
Yeah.
Just back testing at this point. It's a lot of back testing.
I can imagine.
And then you're thinking, oh, no, it shouldn't have told me because of this anomaly not being added on. So it's a lot of that. But yeah, that's basically all my time. So if I don't have a date on Valentine's Day, I'm definitely building my model.
Okay. No, we'll come back to that. No, you can't be working on a Friday night when you should be enjoying the night out. But I want to look at how you got to that point. Like, 'cause building a model and from an investor point of view, I mean, we have... Every week on Investor Insights, we try and look at something new. We try and enhance how people approach investments. And I suppose for you to get to a point where you're building a model, you have to have thought sufficient for me. I'm not satisfied with what I'm currently getting out of the information. And as I say, that gold has just touched $2,900 an ounce. I'm not kidding. We are at all-time highs. $2,900 a fine ounce.
$90 away from that.
That's it. From your target in the Market Matters. If you missed Market Matters, go back. It's under our live tab on our YouTube page. If you're listening to the audio, it was the first segment in our audio. But the levels that were touched on and mentioned by Moshima in that segment are already coming to light here. And we haven't even moved through the end of the episode. We'll come back to gold. Mm-hmm. I want to look at some other things on our wall now.
Right.
We've had a couple of things on the wall that we've been tinkering with, that we've just been kind of trying to figure out where do we put them, how do we like them, and how do we feel about certain stocks. Sure. I want to start with Sasol, purely because Sasol's now at new all-time lows. It was at 52-week lows last week. We're now closer to 70 Rand a share here. This is a stock at some point that was at 600 Rand a share. And so I know that your model has something to say about this. What's happening there?
So unfortunately, it's just been giving me a sell the whole time. So it's just saying, not now, not now, not now. But let me tell you that I am waiting with bated breath for the Sasol to go up because, in fact, it's all-time low, Jimmy,
mm-hmm.
which is very possible in terms. So the all-time low was literally at 20 Rand.
Yeah, that was the pandemic. That was the oil price getting to zero.
Yeah.
That chaos.
So, I mean, cyclically, that should be, psychologically should be a point where, so there probably could be downside towards there before we see a little bottoming up thing happening. And from the model, it just seems as if the downside is likely to continue, which then means for people who are not in, people like you and I, who have been
waiting with bated breath.
Means we need to kind of wait a little bit more. Mm-hmm. It looks as if it trades through, what's that level right there? 71.20.
Mm-hmm.
And it's RS Weekly. RSI is not even that oversold. Ooh.
You say 71 Rand 20. 26. We were at 73 Rand this morning. Let me check if we're anywhere near 71.
So we
73.40 at the moment.
Yeah, so 71.20 is key support from 2020, in fact. So if it breaches that, that could just cause quite a thrust of downside to that 20 mark.
Okay, so we're...
So that means you must wait still.
Okay, so we're waiting for 71 Rand 20-ish to see what happens there.
Next level would then be 42.
That is and 42 scary,
it's
eh?
A quick move to 20.
Yeah.
Then that's when we could then... I feel at that point, psychologically, there would then be that kind of top... That you know, we just move sideways until we then see that upside. So in that sideways, still we can't get in. This is it's very much a wait and see game with this. Like if you get in at this point and thinking, oh, it's nice and cheap, you might suffer the consequences of it falling to 20 Rand.
Mm.
So it's a wait and see game. And what the model is literally going to be saying is at this point, it's saying stay short. The downside's continuing. And at some point it would then say, look, there seems to be a change in sentiment. Give you a warning until it literally breaches a key level that says it's time to get in.
Okay.
As I said, at this point, it's like, stay out.
So what is your model liking then at the moment? What are you looking at what's interesting?
It's given a nice flag. It's been giving green flags on property stocks since 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And now something which I've been waiting for as much as I've been waiting for with Sasol is the telecoms.
Okay. So MTN, Vodacom, those likes. Okay. Yes.
Except Vodacom.
Except Vodacom. Or, yeah, I thought you were going to say except Telkom, but okay.
No, that's the funny thing. Mm. Okay, now I'm not going to put fundamentals into it.
No, of course.
Telkom. So Vodacom has got this silly way. It's just so erratic. The movement's so erratic that you feel like you've invested and then you can lose the money quickly. And I think it's based on a lot of the fundamentals and the whole please call me.
Mm.
You know, they're having to pay off. I'm not too sure what the status quo is, but
that's still happening. That ongoing case that's gone to the constitutional court. Yes. Yes. So the amount has yet to be determined. I think we're still appealing that case in the con court.
So that's the
dark cloud.
The dark cloud or the conundrum about it that's not causing that. Even if there is that upward move, you may just be stuck in a sideways band. Mm. So that's particularly why I'm not liking Vodacom at this point, is until this dust has settled is when we will then see that movement. But funny enough, your MTNs, MTN being...
Which, as you say, MTN bounced perfectly off of 80 Rand.
And what I particularly love about MTN is it broke out of that bear trend. And this is a long-standing one, right?
Long-standing from 2022 February.
No, even 2016.
Oh, yes. Okay, so 2015. Okay, yeah, 2014, 2015, we came down. Then we pushed back up, but we didn't go out and take out those highs. And now we kind of can... Okay.
So can you see the value? Yeah. Now it's broken out. And what I like, something that's very, very common with shares that break out, it's called a return move. Mm. So it breaks out, then it goes back towards the breakout point. And I call it the point of kind of trying to feel if is this truly a real breakout. Mm. And I would like many shares to do that, because once there is that and it doesn't really return back into its bear trend, that's what sets off the bias.
That's the confirmation of saying we're actually moving.
And this is like literally what we're seeing with MTN.
Mm.
Blue Label. Blue Label has always been my favorite since 2020.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at it right now, it's
actually
doing,
yeah. I haven't looked at Blue Label in a while.
I've been
More affordable than its peers at 6 Rand 50, exactly. I suppose.
So that is one of my top pick from a while back.
Okay,
MTN and Telkom. I called it. It broke out of its blue, broke out in 2024, and yeah, it was called a buy at 4 Rand.
We still need to kind of take out 7 Rand 50. I think.
Yeah, that would
be looking at it. Yeah, key level at the moment.
Yeah, that's the key level. Mm. Once it gets out of there, then I mean, what is the highest it has traded? This is very much a buy.
Now, highest is traded as 22 Rand-ish around 2016.
At these prices.
Yeah, yeah, you're getting it at less than 25%. Yeah, yeah.
For as long as that uptrend is intact.
Mm.
And if I do that little Dow theory thing, it looks like it's on that top that once it's breached, it could then go to that 750 quite quickly. So it would be...
And Vodacom?
Vodacom did a nice move, and I think it just followed its peers. It just didn't want to be left behind. It was like,
I'm seeing it now at 120 Rand a share, kind of bouncing off of 87, 85-ish. Still a long way away from
180
Rand highs of 2017 or so. But as you said, we're not too optimistic about this at the moment.
We're liking blue.
MTN's already on our wall. I think we have Blue Label on the wall as well, if I remember correctly. Blue Label Telecoms would be there.
I would add Telkom as well.
We had Telkom as... I remember the conversation Cy and I had around Telkom was we felt Telkom was stale. They weren't doing much. And they broke out from the 20 Rand to 30 Rand level, but we didn't see them going back towards 40 Rand or even 50 Rand. What are you seeing there?
I mean, it's a pity I would have shown you the return move vibe, but it's fine. But it's already done that whole breakout return, and then it's very similar to so in that, when you saw that staleness, it's because the share price wasn't doing much. In that, are we breaking off for real? Is this happening? And now when the buyer is seeing that it's happening is what we're seeing at this point. It's actually now trading in the second phase. Remember the 1-2 phases?
Yes, yes, yes.
So the second phase is going to get a bit more steeper.
So this is that phase to get in.
It's a phase to get in.
Okay.
It's a phase to get in. With MTN though, I just want to warn you that just wait a little bit, because that RSI is extremely overbought on the weekly chart. So wait about a week or two before you want to get in, because you'd get in a bit cheaper than current levels. But yeah, Blue and Telkom are just saying... You can invest at any time from today.
Yeah, because I'm looking at I've just put up a Telkom chart. Okay, yes, today was a good day for Telkom.
Nice one.
Yeah, today is up about 4% already. We had gotten to that 34 Rand and kind of hit. So we'd gotten to 36, kind of come down to 32, and now we're back at 36 again. So very interesting from that breakout from around 26 Rand a share where it just refused to move.
You're right. So now, you remember, that was key resistance. It breached, it broke, and then got back to the 26, didn't infiltrate. So that's what's attracting the buyers. And also breaking out of a flag pattern, which is once it does break from there, that's a huge move. Yeah, we could see.
It is. I mean, at some point.
We could go through that $40.
That's it. At some point, Telkom was at 100 rand a share around 2019. Even pre-2010, it was higher than that. But I mean, Telkom's obviously had their issues with being partly SOE. They've had issues with their SwiftNet business and unbundling that business for 6 billion rand. But these are stocks to watch. So we need to update our wall. We need to update Telkom. We need to update Blue Label. MTN we have on the wall. We might even need to downgrade Vodacom. I don't remember where we had it on the wall. But telecoms is a sector you're liking.
It's a sector, yeah. I'm starting to like that because it's like a sassol. Sorry to compare. It's just been falling, really not giving us. But this type of move is now, and you can tell that it's a clever money coming in with the celerity of the movement. It's just the asset managers obviously don't want to disrupt the market, but they've been buying quietly. And every time it pulls back, they've been buying. And now you can tell that certain retailers are starting to catch that wind, which is why we're seeing this splurge of upside.
What sectors are you staying away from at the moment?
At this, for a near term, I would stay away from banks at this point because there's always this correlation between gold and banks. So when gold goes up, banks tend to struggle.
Okay.
You should look at that correlation. Mm. And with what's happening currently,
with the gold conversation we had,
I think that the banks are going to struggle a little until such time as the gold stocks start to pull back. So you might see a bit of just watch that correlation. It's quite a interesting one where there's a switch out of gold into, I don't know why it always kind of happens. So if one goes up, the other falls, and the other one goes. So if you invested in both, you should then know that one is going to pull back, but one would make up, you know, for that loss. So just be mindful of that correlation out of gold.
Out of the banks. That's very interesting. I think that's an interesting note to leave the show on. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Moshima, thank you ever so much for standing in and for being an amazing co-host.
No, I love you guys.
We absolutely love having you here. You are welcome anytime. I know our community would love to have more of you on the show. Folks, like, subscribe, follow, share, do all the things that you must do to get us to our next 20,000. Thanks for tuning in, as always. We're going to leave the show on the interesting note that we have been doing for the last couple of weeks. That's our unfiltered opinion of the week. And the honor goes to our honored guest to give us that opinion.
Okay, unfortunately, sorry, it's about the Trump store.
Okay.
All right, I know. I thought I was going to talk about the pineapples and pizza, but... I'm just putting a different spin to it.
Okay.
You know, in terms of him being a changer of some sort from what. So I think, unfortunately, he's become that clown. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, you're allowed to say anything.
Okay. He's become that clown, the sacrificial lamb that we're in now, where he is thinking the change is meant for the US, but it's actually disbanding all the shackles that it had created previously with the aid. And holding us in chokehold. So if you look at it that way, that he is starting to implement that type of change in order for that independency in a lot of countries, particularly in Africa, you can see a lot of the European countries also thinking, wait, what is happening here? There's a little murmuring revolution in terms of changing how policies were then to newer policies that are beneficial, even despite. So yes, he may be what he is, but just watch the changes that he's making that could be quite beneficial for the continent and just investors in general. Right now, just ride the wave of, like, the market seem to love him. So just ride that wave.
The orange Mussolini is unshackling the world, and Mary Mary wouldn't have been proud if they knew what would be happening to their song now. On that note, until next time, investing isn't hard. Just try it.